Almost there. Hey, we're live. Hey, folks. Thanks for tuning in to the BAMF podcast. I'm your host, Mike Lafferty, here with Dr. Comics himself, Jason Chondro. How are you doing, sir?
You know, it's a pretty good day out here in the Pacific Northwest. It's a little hot, but it's beautiful.
I understand we had 3 days of 100 plus here in Denver last week. Sounds like you guys are getting that in the near future.
That's right. Yeah, this weekend it's going to be over 100. But, you know, that's all right. We're hiding inside and putting frozen ice jugs in front of the fans like
like grandma and grandpa used to do. All right. Jason, I apologize. I'm contractually obligated to play this musical video intro. Does Ken Hite have that in his podcast? No, he does not.
No, he does not.
Yeah. And look, who's walking in like Kramer? It is Jim Seals. Jim Seals, how are you, sir? We're looking at your ceiling fan.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm doing this on my cell phone.
Okay, no worries. Cool.
Ooh,
hey, we're live. We're on. That's why I said you're walking in like Kramer, because we are live here to talk about Loki episode 3. And I will put the trailer on in the background on silent so we can talk about it. And what did you guys think? Just a quick temperature check. What did you guys think of this one?
Well, so it's interesting. This is so different than last week's episode because, of course, for us, because we had 7 people on last week, right?
And maybe 10, might have been 12. I don't know.
It was 12. And now it's like Jim and I, and we're like, okay, so I can totally unpack. So I have a lot to say, not just about this episode, but about the whole show, which I'm finding very interesting. We're halfway through it now. Like, this is only a 6-episode series. Mm-hmm. But before we get into this, I have to say I did see one thing that really disappointed me and made me want to cry. And that is the car commercial with every character from the Marvel television shows in it. It starts off with Loki selling an SUV, and then it goes to the new Captain America, and then even Wanda shows up selling a car. And I'm like, oh man, this is really bad. Do I? But I like the show. It's interesting. It's got me. I'm following along with it. The first couple of episodes were sort of world building and setting up the problem. And now we're in the middle, so we're complicating things. We're making it. And I don't believe for a minute that they're actually stranded on this planet, Lamentis One, right? Like, the Tempad is in Loki's possession. He's a master of illusion. Like, the idea that it was out of power in the first place, or that it is broken, I don't believe that for a second. Like, he just does that so that he can force Sylvie to not kill him, and that they can figure, and he can spend time with her and figure out what's going on. He can make her talk to him instead of trying to stab him if they're stranded on wherever they are. So I'm not worried about them getting off the planet. I'm with the show. I like it. It doesn't have a big thematic grab like WandaVision was clearly about her trauma.
Mm-hmm.
Captain America, the Winter Soldier and the Falcon was clearly about, like, you know, who's going to inherit this legacy. This show doesn't have that. In many ways, it's more of a kind of straight up police procedural, but with time travel.
We lost Jim.
Yeah, he's probably trying to find a new way to connect on.
Okay.
But so in many ways, it's a more conventional story, which which I'm fine with.
I remember that line from Wreck-It Ralph, where he's talking to the guy from one of the fighting video games. And he's like, Ralph, you are bad guy, but this does not mean you are bad guy.
Yeah.
I keep thinking about this in regards to Loki.
Loki is a classic anti-hero. And I use that word in a very specific way, because in comics and in gaming and in novels and in fandom, we can use the word anti-hero in a very loose way to kind of mean any bad guy that we kind of like. But I mean an anti-hero in a very specific way, which is somebody who does the right thing for the wrong reasons, right? So he's going to save the universe, He's not going to do it because he wants to or because it's the right thing. He's going to do it because he's terrified or wants revenge or because it's fun. Right?
Yeah. At the end of Thor 2, going back a decade, he does stop and do something noble to help out Thor, doesn't he? But then he fakes his own death because he's Loki and he's kind of a dick. But
Well, there's this old saying in film called the pet the dog scene, where you put a moment in the film that shows that the protagonist is a good person underneath that evil, crusty exterior. But Loki isn't, in many ways, I don't think, is like that. Hiddleston carries the character, his charisma, and the way he plays him is so likable. Like, people want to like him. We kind of instinctively want to like him. And, oh, Jim's back.
Hey, Jim.
I'm on a laptop now.
Okay. Well, I'm gonna shut up, and we're going to hear what you think about this show.
Okay, so we're talking macro Loki thoughts.
Well, or this particular episode, if you want.
Well, this episode gave me a headache because of the neon.
The
lighting scheme of it, just like I watched it this morning, it just sort of gave me a kind of a headache just kind of looking at it. It was very garish. I did hail before I had to drop out really quick, but you were talking that there was no thematic hook.
Well, I think there is, but it's certainly more subtle than the other previous two shows, right? Like, in the first two episodes, we very much stressed kind of what Loki's personal quest is and also this larger issue of the multiverse. So in some ways, that's our hook. But what do you think?
I think fundamentally this is a story about a character who hates himself, ultimately, fundamentally coming to either love himself by the end of the story or at least be able to live with himself.
Yeah, yeah. I agree that scene between him and Owen Wilson's character, when he finally confesses through his own speech for the first Avengers movie that he hurts people because he is afraid and weak and he uses violence to assert himself and to gain control over other people and his environment. And that's when Owen Wilson says, you know, you do know yourself. Like, that, there is a lot of self-loathing in that scene. Yeah.
Yeah, if we look at the first episode, the first episode sort of breaks it down. Like, this is a Loki at his worst. Like, right, the criticism of Avengers, when Avengers first came out, was that they took an interesting character in the Thor movies, Loki, and they just sort of made him a henchman.
Yeah, yeah.
And instead of running away from this, the show is sort of embracing it. Yes, he did make himself a henchman.
Yeah.
And why did he do that? Like, what is he fundamentally trying to sort of gain from that?
And yeah.
Exploring that as the aspect, as opposed to running away from that.
Yeah.
And then episode two, it's all about, well, myself is my enemy. Like, how do I outthink myself?
Yeah.
And now we'll get into the point where they'll sort of like emotionally, like he's trying to emotionally empathize with this variant of himself. He's trying to get some understanding. I do wish the show was a little more clear as to whether or not she is a variant or just a holistically separate character. And this is probably where my comic book knowledge is working against me, because like we said last time, Sylvie is a character in the comic books.
Yeah, but I think that we're falling into a trap if we focus too much on the comics representation of that character.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you. I'm pointing it out as like that's one of my problems watching the show is I've got comic knowledge working against MCU knowledge, and I want to fit things into, you know, I want to fit the pegs into
she's really just Loki. She is a Loki. But she has claimed a new identity for herself, and she chose the name Sylvie, right?
Is this building towards the League of Lokis, kind of the Council of Richards, and that Fantastic Four run?
Well, it's certainly moving towards, this is the thing. Mm-hmm. Like, to me, from the very first episode, it became clear that not only are the timekeepers, the timekeepers, we want them to fail. Owen suggested that they've already failed. I don't know if that's true or not, but what they're doing is so heartless and pitiless, the way that they destroy all of these variants and all of these alternate realities, and just by picking one timeline, like what makes that one timeline any better than any other, right? And plus, as fans, we want the multiverse because we want to have all these crazy stories, and we want to have, you know, multiple Peter Parkers, and we want to have, you know, all that crazy stuff going on. So both because it is unjust and unfun, we want the timekeepers to fail. And Loki's going to do that. So we presume, I mean, he's the protagonist. Him or Sylvie are going to do this. So in many ways, he's being set up. He's hired by the timekeepers. He's given this chance to work with the timekeepers. But we're just waiting for him to stab them in the back and betray them. But by betraying them, he will do good. By failing in his purpose, he will succeed at a far greater, far better purpose.
Well, I've got my Rytos cap on.
Okay.
I don't watch anything without my Rytos cap.
Yeah. I saw you made a tweet about this, and I think you're wrong, but go ahead.
Well, I think what this is heading is we have to go save Rene Russo.
Yeah.
We have to go save Loki's mom, and here's why.
Okay.
Loki is the reason mom died.
Yeah, that's right.
They established that very clearly in the first episode, and he doesn't have an answer as to why he necessarily did that. I think the only way you can break all of this is you have to give him a motivating factor, because right now Loki's just sort of lounging around. Like, he's not really, like, we call him the protagonist because the show is named after him, but he doesn't have a mission. He doesn't really have a goal, except for, I want to sit down and talk to three people.
Yeah.
Talk to them about what? Like, what is it that you want from this conversation?
Yeah.
Like, I understand that Loki sees them as a power base because they have, like, turned Infinity Stones into paperweights.
Yeah.
I get nervous whenever a show is playing with big secrets, because I've been burned. Been burned, Jim.
I know. WandaVision's still wrong. Like, that's sort of my rubric is yeah. And they keep calling them devils. I'm like, no, I'm not going down Mephisto's road again.
Yeah,
I'm not doing that.
Yeah, we all learned our lesson from that. I'll tell you why I am 100% on board with a scene with Rene Russo in it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that he'll save her. Or I don't think he'll be able to save her. I think we're gonna maybe get something more like the Thor scene when Thor goes back in time in Endgame and sees her, and they have a conversation, and she can understand what's going on, and she helps him find himself again, right? Her character, Mom, is a way for Thor to regain his own identity. I can see her doing a similar thing in this show. The reason why I don't think we're going to save her, it's possible, is because that doesn't seem like this kind of show to me. Like, I don't see a lot of, although there is time travel in the show, we don't see time shenanigans in the show, right? Like, they don't go back in time and fix their, this isn't Bill and Ted, right? They're not like, well, I'll just go back in time and I'll plant something here under this rock and now I'll pick up the rock and, oh, there it is. Like, this isn't that kind of a show. We don't see them circling back and seeing themselves or overlapping in time.
You see this tweet here?
What's that?
Michael Waldron is one of the producers. He's being called the showrunner of Loki.
Yeah,
I didn't know they had traditional show. And this is his tweet from Mother's Day this year.
Well, there you go. Happy Mother's Day. Yeah, he's the writer.
So here's one of the reasons why I think we're going to save Mom.
Okay.
Disney is very much self-aware to the sense of criticism against the Disney brand.
Sure.
So we've seen this in all the sort of live-action Disney movies. They spend an inordinate amount of time, film time, addressing whatever criticisms were made against the original property.
That's
one of the reasons why Beauty and the Beast is sort of unwatchable live-action, because we've been spending so much time and minutia on addressing any sort of, like, Stockholm Syndrome concerns. It gets in the way of the story.
Yeah.
I think they're positioning Loki as a traditional sort of Disney prince,
yeah.
Or in Sylvie's case, a princess.
Yeah.
Mom's already dead.
Yeah.
What's the one criticism about Disney princesses? His mom is always dead before we meet the princess.
I guess maybe.
So now we have a metatextual reason why Disney would want to go out and save mom.
That's funny. Because Bambi's mom died, so we have to save Loki's mom, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
You know, not just Bambi, but like Jasmine's mom's Neville. There's so many princesses.
Snow White, Cinderella.
I know.
And we just turned Loki into a princess.
Waldron, sorry, one quick thought. He is being called the showrunner. He is a writer. And guess what else he also wrote? The script for Doctor Strange, the next movie.
Yeah, that's right.
The multiverse. So yeah.
Yeah. So this is the thing. One of the things that I think interests me the most about this show, or what I'm asking about the show is like, don't we already know how it ends? Don't we know that it ends with the multiverse happening? And how are the, like, is it gonna, how is the ending gonna feel? Is it gonna be, are they gonna have a twist that's gonna make it interesting? Or is it gonna be kind of like fulfilling this thing that we as fans already know is gonna happen? It's a tough writer challenge.
I had to stop myself from fast forwarding through a few episodes of Falcon and Winter Soldier for a very similar reason, because I knew where that train was headed.
Yeah, yeah.
I had a pretty good idea of exactly how things were going to end. Hell, for WandaVision.
I don't have any desire to fast forward through these things. I'm just curious. Like, but anyway,
I think the more so those the macro issue of the multiverse, because we're getting what ifs, right? We're going to get actual stories in different universes.
Yeah.
Have another movie called the Multiverse of Madness.
Yeah,
we know that that's where it's heading. The side point is we have a Loki variant that shouldn't exist in the timeline.
Right.
Like, whatever his story is, the fulfillment of his story is going to be the ending of the show. So they're going to have the macro ending of whatever, you know, the time variant society is destroyed. But what happens to Loki is the most important thing of the story.
The big revelation in this episode is that the people that work for the TVA are all variants. The what we're initially told in the first episode is that the timekeepers created the entire TVA and everybody in it. Now, everybody that listened to that knew that was complete bullshit. Like, they created a whole, like, people out of nothing? That doesn't sound right. Now, Loki might not have questioned that at first because he's used to the idea that gods would create people. That probably sounded a lot more normal to him than it does to us. But this idea that the TVA created every single employee in the timekeepers created everybody, that never made any sense. Now we know for certain that they are themselves variants. They are people from alternate timelines that the timekeepers have essentially abducted. And this explains Mobius's obsession with jet skis, right? Because clearly when he was in his original timeline, he either had a jet ski or wanted a jet ski or something like that. This is a holdover from his previous life.
I kind of want a jet ski now.
Yeah. So though that revelation is going to have to come out, and Owen Wilson's character Mobius is going to have a chance to get back to. He's going to get a jet ski. He's got to get the payoff to his former life. That's what I want to see. I want to see the scene where everybody in the TVA is allowed to go. All of their multiversal time streams come back, and they're all allowed to go back into those things and have their lives again. Because they're victims. Everybody in the TVA is a victim.
And I think no one's more a victim than the paper pusher from the first two episodes, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Because he's been so altered, he doesn't have any concept of what fish are.
That's right. That's right. He doesn't know. That's right. Yeah, he doesn't know anything. Yeah.
And I also want to know, there was a thing that I wanted to bring up in the first two episodes. Everyone's drinking certain sodas. They're all drinking like these little soda cans.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that's influencing their memory or making them more susceptible to believing. Because it's in almost every shot when you're in the TVA.
Oh, that's interesting. Yes. You know, so that whole aesthetic of the TVA, that whole kind of 80s, early IBM aesthetic, right? Where like You know.
Can I depress you, Jason?
Say again.
Can I depress? There's an office not 15 miles from my house. I'd be in Boulder. You walk in there, it looks like that. It's like walking into a museum. It's depressing as hell. But
Yeah. And of course, the TVA is also shot at the hotel in Atlanta where Dragon Con is held every year. So everybody who goes to Dragon Con recognizes that giant elevator shaft that goes up with like all the rooms in a circle. That's the interior of the Hyatt, I think, in Atlanta. So you've seen people cosplaying as Loki at the base of those elevators every year for the last 10 years. So it's kind of funny. But that is interesting, Jim, that maybe it's like doping them, right? Like that also provides an easy way for them to be cured. Like at first I thought, well, if they're all like mind wiped or something, then how do the timekeepers undo all that? But if it's just a drug that they're all taking when they drink their soda, and then you can just stop the soda coming and then all their memories will come back. Narratively, that's an easy fix.
Yeah, because it's all over those first two episodes. Like anytime you see someone, like those random cups, random cans of soda pop, I'm like, what is this thing?
When
is Marvel going to sell it?
Well, the other thing that struck me about that was branding, like the bubble, the purple gum, right? That we see that Sylvie gave the kid, and it's got like a nuclear. I can't remember what the name of it is, but it's got like a nuclear.
It was like Kablooey or something like that.
Kablooey, that's it. Yeah, and it reminded me of Meltdowns from Watchmen, right? The famous candy in Watchmen. Mm-hmm.
I think you guys are going. This is Quicksilver in WandaVision. It's still cool world building. It's never going to pay off.
Oh, yeah. Well, we'll see. Yeah, it's possible.
I think one of the things that's happening, Hale, is the only touchstone to the TVA that we have is Mobius, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, and the judge, right? Renslayer.
Yeah, but Loki isn't interacting with that person.
Right, right.
And that person's higher up in the food chain. Like, I get the idea that Mobius is like he's higher up in the food chain than the papal pusher whose name is escaping me. But he's not making a decision. He's not calling any shots.
Mobius's character is the commissioner, is the detective Gordon.
Mm-hmm.
The Loki's Batman, right? And that's why I love him so much. He's a great foil.
Like he's there. But the one thing about him is he's really like he's in all other areas when he's doing his job, he's really competent, except when it comes to compliance with the timekeepers.
Yeah.
Like he almost becomes infantile when he talks to them in episode 2 about how he has faith in the timekeepers. And it doesn't jive with the rest of his street small, like I'm going to outthink Loki because of course Loki's stalling for time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that Renslayer knows what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Like she knows the truth about the timekeepers, that they don't exist or they've never existed or that they're like holograms or whatever. Whatever the truth is, she knows it. And she helps to conceal it from everybody else.
Hey, check me on something. Are Loki and Baron Zemo the only two Marvel movie villains still alive at this point?
No.
Abomination's alive. We saw him in Shang-Chi.
Shang-Chi. You guys want to watch that trailer?
I haven't watched it yet, but I did see a picture of the Abomination that made me super happy. They gave him fins.
There are still some bad guys that are out there. Mordo is still out there, who's now a bad guy.
Dormammu still exists.
Yeah, Dormammu. Yeah, exactly. So. You've got White Vision is out there.
Is he a villain? Is he a villain though? I don't know if he's a villain.
I until proven otherwise, he's guilty until proven innocent.
He's at least guilty of upsetting Jason. Because I do agree. Like the more I think about visually, white vision is empirically uncomfortable to look at.
He's empirically what?
He's uncomfortable to look at.
Oh yeah, he's not good to look at. He works better on a page, I think. But maybe I don't know. Before we wrap up too much, I just want to go back and say how fantastic Owen Wilson's performance in these shows are. Sometimes I watch these shows with captions on because I want to catch every single word of the dialogue because there's always hints and little fact bits hidden in there. But I want to encourage watching some of this stuff, like the first episode without captions, allows you to really focus on Owen Wilson's portrayal and the way that he delivers these lines in a really, really natural and subtle way. That conversation with Loki when he's like, oh, you know, that your metaphor, I love that. It makes you sound smart. Loki's like, I am smart. I know.
I am smart. Like, if you have to say it.
Yeah. But then Owen goes, you know, Moby goes, I know. Okay. And there's this kind of resigned finality to his okay. Like, you know, I'm never going to get through to you. Like, you are so egotistical. You have built up this huge tower of will around yourself. And I'm never going to get through that to find the human in you. So that then later, when he does get through, when Loki kind of gets through it himself, when he sees his mother die and he sees himself die, and he realizes that his glorious purpose was to get killed by Thanos in, you know, on a spaceship, then Mobius is able to actually reach through and connect with Loki, and his humanity comes through. I really dig that scene.
I thought for years that Owen Wilson was a talented actor who was underutilized in shit like Wedding Crashers and whatever that stupid Google movie was.
I'm afraid. Note from William King. I'm afraid that Disney is going to try to turn Loki into Jar Jar Binks. I feel that the timekeepers won't allow Loki to realize his wish, and so Loki will aid Kang.
And he'd be a henchman once again.
Well, that would be a pretty crappy narrative arc for Loki. And Tom Hiddleston is an executive producer on this show. And I don't think he would sign off on that. Maybe that's just me guessing.
And as much as I love Kang, Kang is no Thanos. Like, throwing different weight classes, like, I adore Kang, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
Kang Kapo shows up, I'm super happy.
Yeah.
But I just don't see Loki carrying that guy.
You know, Kang is interesting because I never really cared too much about him. He was just another dude in a weird outfit. And his outfit was always like the blue face and the purple. He had that sort of purple spacesuit helmet for a while. And I didn't really get his costume and the high purple boots, you know, like, okay, he looks weird. But then Busek did the Avengers Forever storyline in which Kang is a complete badass. And then of course the Kang War, where he invades and conquers the Earth in a fantastic like 12 issue story, I think that took. I came to like him a lot more after that.
This is where all generations saw the show, because I grew up and I had two little Secret War action figures as a kid, and they were these little chinky, and I had Cap. And I had Kang. And those were the only two figures I had from that line. And I would play the hell out of them until the Kang was all like one color. So I have a deep, unabiding love of Kang. Now, getting back to this issue, this episode in particular, I felt like this episode was a Doctor Who episode. Like, you could put the TARDIS there. You could put Loki in the role of I'm gonna actually say Loki is in the role of the companion, with Sylvie in the role of the doctor, because Sylvie's the one with the plan and the agenda, and all Loki has are questions.
Well, and also Loki is our reader identification character in that episode. Mm-hmm. That's what the companion is in the doctor.
Yeah, and it felt very much with the setting of, oh no, there's an impending apocalypse.
Yep.
We have a small window of time, and we're gonna get in some hijinks along the way. It felt very much like a Doctor Who episode.
A great example of Loki as an anti-hero is in this episode when they talk about the Ark, and he's like, well, let's get on the Ark and we'll get away on the Ark. And he's going to save everybody on the Ark from the apocalypse, not because it's good, but because he wants to not die, right? But I think some of that's kind of a show. I think that Loki is a good person. He just has this... He can't portray that to the world. Loki perceives being good as a weakness. And so it's a vulnerability. And because he can't allow himself to appear vulnerable, he's a master of illusion, he projects this cynical, oh, I'm only in it for power and myself attitude all the time. That's not who he really is. But it's his defense mechanism. It's kind of like in Firefly, when Mal is actually a good character. He's a good person. But he pretends to not be good because he's afraid people will take advantage of his goodness.
Yeah, I agree with you there, especially at the end of the episode when the Ark explodes and he's standing there and Sylvie walks away.
Oh, and we have to talk about that last sequence, that's one long shot, right? The technical aspects of that final sequence where Loki and Sylvie are running around, you know, trying to get where they want to go, and there's all these meteors coming down. Rewatch that sequence because that is all done as one long shot. Like from the moment when the mist kind of fades and we see Loki's face and then he gets up, and then it's just them running around and there's explosions and they're hiding and then they get up and they run around somewhere else. And then finally they all look up at the arc as the meteor hits the arc, and then that's the end of the long shot. Now, it might not actually be a long shot, as we've learned from Birdman, you can fake that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I get that. But they're trying to create, but it's an interesting feeling when you watch that sequence and there's no breaks, that it's all just like the camera running around inside that town as it's blowing up.
Yeah, we actually wound up just by virtue of having to take care of three dogs, pausing right before that scene started. When we came back to it like 10 minutes later, we just watched the whole thing. By the end of it, I was a little exhausted.
Yeah, for sure.
Because I was like, it felt like going through like a Disneyland storybook ride. We were just moving from like one instance to another, and you're like, like some of the continuity you have to fill into your head because the camera wasn't looking in that particular spot at that time. I did enjoy that aspect of it. I thought the technical aspect of it was pretty cool.
The music is good. They have these music cues, like the songs at the end of the episodes and the songs at the beginning of the episodes. They're not what you would expect. If someone told you, okay, we're going to have a Loki television show and we're going to play you like, you know, the music is weird.
I there was one thing about this particular episode I did want to bring up, and that's the class issue. So in this episode, it's not subtle about it. You have like Wolf sitting out there saying they're only letting the rich people on. The rich people get the tickets. The payoff to that was the fact that when Loki starts singing a folk song, and that's what pisses off the rich person to go rich out, is he's singing a folk song. He's singing, you know, essentially poor people music.
Yeah.
And it's not that he's acting out or he's drinking or he's being belligerent. It's that he's doing this little ditty, and the guy's like, okay, I know you're not supposed to be here.
Yeah, that's interesting. I loved how this is – they really get to great moments of Loki's actual characterization. Like he says, well, you relax your way, I'll relax mine. And his way is to drink a lot, party. And a flashback to the very first Thor movie when Thor drinks the coffee, says, this is excellent. Throws it to the ground and says, another! Right? Because that's how we do it in Asgard. Like, that's how you show that you're enjoying the drink, right? And Loki does the exact same thing. And it helps us build that it feels like a genuine Loki. This is what this Loki is actually like. And
this Loki, I understand Thor more by retrospect. Like, one of the things that Thor does in the movies is he's always constantly reaching out to his brother.
That's right.
As an older brother who has siblings who sometimes fall by the wayside, it's a little frustrating because I'm like, I understand that you in your head, you see the one thing, like you see the evil movie Loki, but you're still like, he's still my brother. He's still like, we used to get in hijinks when we were eight.
Yeah,
and this
yeah.
is not Loki that's entertaining the crowd and engaging in folk music. Like, I understand why you would be like, okay, I'm going to risk the mission, risk my life trying to save you.
Oh, canonically bi, everybody.
No.
Loki is canonically bi. He gets in a conversation with Sylvie, and they both acknowledge that they have had partners of both of two genders. This is interesting because the director of Loki is bi, and she wanted to make sure that got into the show. She tweeted about this after this episode came out, that it was important to her to get that validated on screen. Of course, people that read Norse mythology know that this is pretty low stakes for Loki, who once got turned into a horse, got impregnated by another horse, and then gave birth to a horse.
Yeah, Marvel's not going there, buddy. It's taken us this long to get my sexual reference. It took us like the Beauty and the Beast movie to get maybe a gay character. No. We're not heading anywhere near bestiality, my friend.
I was just reading another story in which Thor dresses in drag to impersonate a Norse goddess.
Yeah.
They promise Freya.
It was.
They promise Freya to the giant.
Either a giant or a troll. Yeah. I actually heard that story on a campfire when I was in Norway when I was 17.
There you go.
So. They're very fond of that story, at least people I knew were.
Well, now I kind of want to see Chris Hemsworth in a dress.
You know he would do it. He would.
I'm pretty sure he would. It's just it's like they're talking about how DC won't let Batman canonically do a certain thing because they got to sell those toys, and you know that.
Anyway.
So yeah. So there's this Dave Chappelle skit from about 20 years ago where he took out this little box on a date. And it was, you know, the wrap it up box. It's sort of like what they do for celebrities at the Oscars when someone's speech has gone on too long. They press the button and it's, you know, flashes wrap it up and starts playing some string of music. We're at that point of the podcast. And I just wanted to point out two things. I think it was observed earlier that it doesn't seem like Loki is really following a normal narrative arc. It's hard to look at this and see a hero's quest or even see what he wants or what he's doing. And that makes me uncomfortable. Because I can't guess where this show is going. I feel like it seems like they're hiding a big switcheroo or a big twist, you know, down the road somewhere. And I hope they are, and I hope it's great and it pays off fantastically, but it makes me nervous. I watched Lost, you know, and those scars are still there.
You're okay.
So, you cannot buy physical media of, well, Mandalorian, WandaVision, this show, Loki, or Falcon and Winter Soldier, they're never going to sell you a DVD. They're never going to sell you a download. If you want this, you got to subscribe to Disney Plus in perpetuity, no one's talking about it, but it's an interesting way to change how you handle your media.
Yeah, so Disney said this about the movies, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then they released Pinocchio on VHS.
Yeah.
Give Disney enough time. Eventually, they will sell you a physical media version of these shows. We just won't do it now.
Maybe it'll be in a holographic cube, you know, or something.
Who knows?
They want to collect a certain amount of money off of it before they feel like, and who knows what the streaming market is going to look like in 5-10 years, you know?
Mm-hmm. Like, we'll have neural implants or something. So, all right, I got to go do dad stuff. I will catch you guys later. And to all of our listeners and viewers out there in internet land, we will catch you next time on the BAMF podcast. And we'll be discussing Loki again next Friday. And before I go, I always forget to play the outro music. So that never gets old. All right, see you guys next time.
Have a good one.
Good night, everyone.